This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
Final seconds. It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
Here's your host, 6'1", former Oklahoma Sooner basketball player, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome into SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. On this Friday night, I am Alyssa Walker-Campbell, and we are so excited because you know what? College football is back. It is week one of the NFL, and we are ready for some big, big seasons and some big, big plays. We're thrilled to have with us tonight, who is joining us from the great state of Utah, that is BYU beat writer, who has covered the Cougar sports since 1993, that is Jeff Call. He has just released his brand new book. It is titled 100 Things BYU Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die, teamed up with our good friends from Triumph Books, and we are ready for a complete season preview and breakdown and also a recap of what happened last weekend. Good evening, Jeff. It's nice to have you with us.
Oh, great. Thank you for having me on.
Well, we're going to preview the matchup, the big rival this week, BYU and Utah. But before we even dive into the book, take us back to 1 week ago. What happened in that particular game against LSU?
Well, I think going into the game, BYU knew they were up for a big challenge because LSU is obviously very talented. And I think BYU felt that they could move the ball against LSU, but they just they struggled all night. They couldn't run the ball. They ended up with -5 yards rushing. Tanner Mangum struggled through some, poor passes and things. And it was just a difficult night for BYU overall. I mean, offensively, the Cougars couldn't cross midfield all night. They had 97 yards of total offense. I mean, you just go down, it was just historically bad for this program. I mean, numbers we haven't seen out of this offense in 40 years in some cases. And BYU ran only 38 plays from scrimmage. So, I think part of that can be attributed to LSU. They're an outstanding team. I was very impressed with what they did on Saturday. They're fast, they're aggressive, they're athletic, and the coaching staff sure looks like they know exactly what they're doing. So, on the one hand, you look at that and say, "Well, BYU played a very great team on Saturday," and you can't be too surprised by some of the stuff that happened. On the other hand, BYU is going into this game with Utah this week, trying to, rebound, trying to get their minds right again, trying to restore some confidence, because they'll play another very good defensive team in Utah on Saturday.
Okay, the college football conversation continues with Jeff Call, BYU beat writer, after this quick commercial break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Welcome back to hour number one at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker-Campbell, and right now we're going to be rejoined with the BYU beat writer, Jeff Call, as we get set and ready for the big matchup on Saturday with rival Utah. So, Jeff, you're there. I mean, and you're at practice. What kind of things did they work on to be able to right the ship and to get things headed in the right direction, especially offensively? You got to be able to post some numbers.
Yeah, I think the plan this week is, they've got to find some guys that can make plays. That's been something they've struggled in the first two games with. Tight end Matt Bushman has been a bright spot. He's a freshman, and he's made an immediate impact on the program. He's making plays, making catches and things. But the run game has struggled. They need to find somebody that can step up. One guy that we haven't seen thus far, or much this year, is Ula Tolutau.
Mm-hmm.
He's a running back who originally signed with Wisconsin, served in LDS Mission, came back, and transferred to BYU. He's been pretty banged up, and I think from what we're hearing, he could be healthy this week. And so that's an element of the offense that we have yet to see really this year. I think he's had one carry so far, and that was against Portland State. But we haven't really seen much of him. So I think BYU is hoping that if he's healthy, to plug him in the backfield, hope to get some sort of running game going. And then the other thing is, I think the focus is helping quarterback Tanner Mangum just be more calm and poised. He really had some happy feet on Saturday against LSU. He rushed some things and that kind of contributed to some poor throws. So Tanner Mangum he was a backup last year, but he played almost in the entire year 2 years ago as a freshman. So he has experience. But he is running a new offense, and he's got a lot of new pieces around him, a lot of new receivers and running backs and things. and it's just taking some time to gel. So from BYU's standpoint, I think they're just hoping that some of these younger guys, inexperienced guys, will start to emerge. Tanner can, you know, rely on his experience and calm down a little bit and have a much better showing this week against Utah.
You know, as we reflect on last year for BYU, for the Cougars, they were 9-4. So talk to me, Jeff. I mean, what are the expectations for BYU in 2017? Is this the year, I think many fans are, you know, is this year they're going to be able to return to the national scene, to those good old days? I mean, can they make this happen? I mean, you're talking about you got a young quarterback, but...
Yeah, I mean, around BYU, the expectations are always high. I think last year was a pleasant surprise. Kalani Sitake in his first season, installing a new offense, a new defense, and they end up winning 9 games against a pretty tough schedule. So I think coming into the season, the expectations are, well, let's see if Kalani can raise the bar and get to double-digit wins, something that hasn't happened since 2011. So there's been a lot of optimism around Provo on that front. But, you know, based on what we've seen the first 2 weeks, I think the expectations have been tempered quite a bit because just the struggles of the offense. And not only does BYU play Utah this coming Saturday, but they've got Wisconsin at home the next week. And down the road, they have still have Boise State, they have Mississippi State on the schedule. So a lot of tough challenges looming. And so that just makes it so important for BYU to figure out what's going on offense and get things fixed quickly. Because with that type of schedule, where it's front-loaded like that with so many tough opponents, you can see where, you know, if they don't get things figured out, the season can kind of spiral under out of control a little bit. So the key is for BYU to get this offense figured out and start to get some confidence and some momentum moving forward in order to have that kind of a season they want.
You're exactly right, because when you roll down, as you had just said, the month of September, LSU, Utah, Wisconsin, it doesn't get any easier over the next few weeks. So give us some insight on the matchup on Saturday. Of course, it's going to be aired nationally. It'll be televised on ESPN2, 10:15 kickoff Eastern time. What do we expect, and how do you see this particular game playing out against rival Utah?
Yeah, it's, you know, since BYU became an independent and Utah joined the Pac-12, it's been several years now, 6 years now, I think. So it's kind of odd and unusual for these two teams to be playing so early in the year. September, this is usually a game that you see during typical rivalry week, end of November, that type of time schedule. So people are still trying to get used to the fact of these two teams playing so early in the year, but that's kind of how it is right now, although next year they will play in November for the first time in a while. But I think we're going to see what people are expecting. If history is any guide, these games usually come down to the wire. They usually come down sometimes to the final play. Last year, BYU trailed by one and had a failed two-point conversion that could have, you know, won the game for BYU. So that's kind of how those games go. They're usually close and very hard fought. In this case this year, I think there's a lot of mystery just because, I mean, Utah's played North Dakota and FCS team last week. That's where they opened, and they looked pretty good against North Dakota. And BYU's coming off the game, like we mentioned, it's a very talented LSU team. So Utah's strength is its defense. BYU's weakness right now is its offense. So I think a lot of the focus will be on, again, how BYU can deal with Utah's very ferocious front seven. They like to put pressure on the quarterback. Utah's got a lot of athletes. They move around. Kyle Whittingham's done a great job at Utah for so many years, and that program is just rolling along. And it's going to be a challenge for BYU. BYU has not beaten Utah in 6 years. Utah's pretty much dominated since 2010, and you know it's a big monkey on BYU's back. They're looking to get that off their shoulders and break through and finally get a win over Utah.
BYU beat writer. He has covered the Cougars since 1993. He's an author. That is Jeff Call, who is with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. What a great way to kick off our program tonight. Of course, we extended this invitation because you know what? He has teamed up with our good friends from Triumph Books and just released His new book, 100 Things BYU Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. It is jam-packed. Some great, great stories in there. We're going to hit on that here momentarily. I just want to say, you know, when you look at BYU, I had mentioned earlier, 9-4 last season, but the Cougars' 4 losses were by a total of 8 points. So they are very close. If they can somehow, some way, get through this very difficult stretch of the schedule, as we had been, you know, discussing, you know, LSU, of course, on tomorrow against Utah. And then, you know, Wisconsin, that's certainly not going to be easy. Things can really turn around.
Yeah, that's right. They've got to kind of weather the storm.
Yeah.
I think if you look at from BYU's perspective, you look at the schedule, there's some tough games. But you have Wisconsin at home, you have Utah at home, Boise State at home. So there is a chance to make some headway here going forward. But, you know, again, this BYU being independent, everything kind of relies on performing well early to stay nationally relevant, to win some of these games against P5 opponents, get into the rankings, and try to stay there. And that's a challenge for BYU. So that's why it's so important that BYU get some of these wins here in September and into mid-October, where they can mm-hmm. make a splash nationally.
Yeah. Hey, the title of his book is 100 Things BYU fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. And you offer an opportunity for all the fans to develop a closer relationship to one of their favorite teams, that is BYU. What can our readers look forward to, or listeners look forward to, when they open it up?
Well, first of all, I'll say that Triumph Books has been great to work with. I love the format. And as you know, they've done this with a lot of different programs.
And
it's great. The format's great because you can pick up the book to any page and you can just turn to a chapter and just start reading. And what I try to do, like with the others, is pack the book full of some of the most interesting stories and unique aspects of BYU football and basketball. And we hope that readers enjoy it. Been getting some pretty good reviews so far, but yeah, it was fun for me to do it. It's fun to kind of go back to the history of the program, going back to when the program started in 1922, and kind of just picking out some of the highlights and some of the unique aspects of BYU football.
Definitely want to encourage you to go out and get a copy of it, 100 Things BYU Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. We are flat out of time. Of course, check out the game tomorrow night, 10:15 Eastern Time, Utah BYU, and it will be a compelling matchup, a great rival between those two teams. Thank you so much, Jeff. A great way to kick off our show tonight. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for having me on. Appreciate it.
You bet. Much more coming your way right here in hour number one at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. That's right. Stay close, because we are going to be going up close with Dick Vermeil, legendary and Super Bowl winning coach.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, Alyssa Walker-Campbell, welcome back to SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And we are going to continue with our week one coverage of the NFL. And right now, we are so delighted to have with us one of our favorites, and that is Super Bowl winning coach. You know him, the great Dick Vermeil. Good evening, coach. We have missed you. How was your summer?
I'm doing fine, yeah. It's been very good so far, and there's a lot of it left, so it'll be great.
Absolutely. Well, the road to recovery, it is underway here in Houston after Hurricane Harvey and just the devastation. I know that you saw all of it, and I also know that Houston holds a very special place in your hearts. Just what were your thoughts of just the reaction of just this incredible recovery efforts and the response by so many?
Well, our first response was to call everybody we know, and our good friends that really introduced us to the Houston area, the Pacinis, then on into the Specs organization. We checked in with them, and they were doing all right, but their siblings had some water problems, believe me. But all the players that I've coached in the past that live in Houston, they were saved. They did not really get hit with the floodwaters. They were fortunately located in an area that did not take a wallop, but they were feeling bad for everybody else.
Well, it's been a very difficult time for so many Houstonians, but we've got to tip our hat, coach, to the Texans, J.J. Watt, YouCaring.com, raising over $20 million. I mean, what about just the power of one person and how he was able to, raise money from this devastating and catastrophic hurricane?
Well, no one has a bigger name in Houston than J.J. Watt. So, you know, it's just he's as big a person as he is a player. And in doing, being able to raise $20 million with his name and the support of the Houston fans is amazing. In fact, the Vermeil Wine started a program that every bottle we sold online, 50% went to the J.J. Watts program.
Oh, wow.
So we felt it gave us an opportunity to pay our respects to the Houston area through his program.
Well, it is week one of the NFL, and there is no shortage of storylines. That's why we have extended an invitation to the legendary Super Bowl winning coach, the great Dick Vermeil. He is joining us right here at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And, Coach, let's break it all down because, first and foremost, one of the biggest headlines surrounding in the NFL right now has been the suspension of Ezekiel Elliott and his six games without pay. The suspension was upheld, and there's been a very strong reaction. Would you mind weighing in on this? What is your view? What's your take?
Well, I think we have to back the leadership of the National Football League. You know, the leadership has been very solid to get it to where it's the finest sports organization in the world. And if we contradict or don't agree with the decisions they make on an annual basis based on the discipline of players, then I think we lose the foundation. So I'm all for what they do, and I back them in every way, even sometimes I don't agree with them. But I don't know the details in this case. But obviously it was strong enough that they lost the fight to get the suspension thrown out. So I back the league in their decisions.
As a former head coach in the league, I mean, you're thinking about what kind of change could take place. What kind of things could the Cowboys do to more positively influence their players to make positive and better choices?
Well, you know, sometimes there are scars within the personalities of players long before they get to the NFL. And it takes a few years for these scars to be erased by the coaching staff and these problems. And I think Ezekiel will come out of it fine. He'll come out of it better off for having made a mistake and correcting his mistake and moving forward. And I think the Dallas Cowboys will do everything they can to help him both on and off the field and the problems behind him. But we all have to realize there's a price to pay for the mistakes you make. That's all.
There's a six-game suspension. That is massive. How does the season outlook? How does that change with this particular suspension and it being upheld? How do you see the Cowboys season playing out?
Well, I think they're still going to be an outstanding football team. But, you know, when you take him out of the backfield, you take Ezekiel out of the backfield, they're not as good as they were going to be. But they will have a player in there that will play and play well. And they'll probably win more than they lose without him anyway, because they have the strong offensive line, the great young, maybe the best young quarterback in the National Football League. So I think they'll do a good job. And, you know, their offensive coordinator has done an outstanding job with the offense over the last couple of years. And I think they'll go on and play well. Just hopefully that they can play well enough and keep getting better on defense.
He is back with us, the great Dick Vermeil, tonight at SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio. And I am Elissa Walker-Campbell. We'd love to hear from you. Join us at Twitter at eRadio Sports. You can always go back and listen to this exclusive interview with Coach Vermeil at Podcast Arena, podcastarena.com. Well, Coach, let's move ahead and let's preview some of the games on Sunday. And one of your former teams, the Philadelphia Eagles, they're going to be on the road against the Redskins. And I know Philly, they are wanting to get off to a strong start. And a lot of curiosity on how the 2017 season is going to play out. What intrigues you the most about the Eagles this season? What does the season hold?
I think the Eagles attacked most of the problems they had last year from a personnel standpoint, and I think they've solved them or at least improved them, and I think they're a better football team. I think they're a better football team than the Redskins. You know, last year the Redskins were outstanding on offense, I think number three overall, especially in the passing game. Their running game was below average. Their defense was way below average. And I kind of believe the Eagles will beat them. I think the Eagles were a better team last year and lost to them both times. I think the Eagles will beat them.
And Carson Wentz, of course, returns as the team's quarterback in his second NFL season. What do you think that he improved on and worked on in the offseason and some of the things that he's going to do to be more consistent?
Well, first off, just the 1 year of maturity, having played the whole season, playing all 16 games. And remember, last year he didn't play very much in the preseason. He was out.
That's right.
With an injury. And so he missed most of the training camp, but then all 5 days later, he's starting the league opener. I look for him to keep getting better every game, and I kind of believe I'm as optimistic about him as all the fans are in Philadelphia. Philadelphia tends to overhype sometimes a young good player and expect too much from him, but I think we're expecting a lot from the right guy right now.
You know, when we look at Philadelphia, they have certainly gone through a carousel of quarterbacks over the past 6 years. Let's talk about, Coach, I want to get your perspective on how special is Carson Wentz, and do you think he's the long-term solution?
Well, I think he is. You know, they made a bold move to get him, moving up like they did a year ago. I think he has to prove that he is now. All players, regardless of where they're drafted, sooner or later have to prove their value. And I believe he has the ability to do. Will he be what they anticipate him being? I don't know yet. We'll find out as he plays 16 games this year. His accuracy downfield with the long balls, I think, was questionable last year. Maybe due to poor receivers this year, better wide receivers. I think we have to play it out and see. But I think he has the potential to be one of the top five guys.
Okay, so it's year two for Carson Wentz, and I got to ask you this. How do, you know, rookie quarterbacks, how do they win over the locker room? How do you go about developing trust? And as a head coach, I mean, how do you kind of just help them along and accelerate that process?
Well, remember, Alyssa, trust is not a physical thing. It's an emotional thing. And I think you build trust through relationships. And some people do it quicker and easier than others because they are natural leaders. I think he is a natural leader. And I don't think he has to say anything to gain respect. It's just he, first off, he gains leadership respect through his example. And I think how he communicates with people, he's a humble guy. And I think he's a good connector. I think he connects easily with people. He certainly has connected well with the Philadelphia market. So I think Carson just being himself, he will automatically end up being a great leader just by being what he came to Philadelphia as, a natural leader.
Well, we're talking about building a winning team, and I'm just curious, you know, managing players, how is it different today than it was when you were in the league coaching?
You know, I don't think it's that much different. You know,
really?
It's blown out more and up more because there are no secrets anymore. You know, the Twitter and Facebook and the media as it was, it is today in contrast to the old days. So there are no secrets. And we had a lot of things go wrong and bad and good, too, in the 70s and that when I started in the league as a head coach. And no one knew. Now you get a parking ticket. A player, it makes headlines in the USA Today or wherever. So, but I think players are every bit as easy to communicate and work with today as they ever were. I think they're a little more sophisticated. I think they're better educated. They certainly get paid more. They have more to lose if they make a mistake off the field. I think they're easy to coach as long as they respect you and they trust your program and read you as a person that's trying to help them be better player on a better team. And, I think sometimes you can create your own problems as a coach.
He is simply the best. Dick Vermeil, legendary NFL and Super Bowl winning coach. Pro coaching career spanned over 15 seasons and certainly has done it all. Tell me, Coach, I'm not sure we've ever gotten into this, but what was the biggest obstacle that you faced as a head coach during your time in the NFL, a pro coaching career that spanned over 15 seasons?
Well, I think my biggest obstacle was myself initially. When my first 7 years with the Eagles, and I left because I didn't have the discipline to control my work ethic, and I allowed the passion to become an obsession, and I just couldn't turn it off. I turned it off by leaving the game. And so I think that was sometimes that's self-imposed, and it was in my case. No one asked me to sleep in my office. I did it with my own command, and I think my own insecurities. But, you know, I think it depends on the person. Each person has a different personality. Each person ends up in a leadership position in the league through a different means, different source, a different avenue, whatever it may be. And I got there because I'd been an assistant in the NFL, been the head coach in college, and then was called back because I had success as a head coach in college. So I had head coaching experience. I think the coaches that fail in the league many times fail because they don't have enough leadership experience behind them to help them, you know, handle the overall package of being a head football coach.
Simply the best. Dick Vermeil, been with us tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, legendary Super Bowl winning coach. Hey, give us a shout out. Tell them where they can go to Dick Vermeil Wines and pick up some of your great wines.
Well, the best place to go for us is Specs. You know, there are
of course
market outside of the Napa Valley where we're located. But they can also go just Google Vermeil Wines and order online. We'd appreciate it. Our 2015 Reds are going to be released in December.
Okay.
And I think there's going to be competition to get them because of our new winemakers. This is his first 100% Vermeil product coming out in 2015. And adding Thomas Brown as our winemaker to our program is like adding Tom Brady to your office.
Oh, wow.
He will make a difference. He will make a difference.
Oh, okay, Coach. And we look forward to seeing you down here in Houston. Have a wonderful weekend and send our best to Carol. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay, Lisa, thank you.
Of course. Much more coming your way at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, right here in hour number one. Stay close.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, Alyssa Walker-Campbell, welcome back to SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. As promised, our Week 2 college football coverage, it continues. And right now, it is time to roll up our sleeves, and we're going to get to work because we've got to talk about what in the world's going on at the Big 12 Conference with the Texas Longhorns. They opened up their season with an embarrassing loss to Maryland. And after that game, I tell you what, the Terrapins, they certainly exposed the Longhorns' weaknesses, and they've got a lot of issues to address. And we are so honored to have back with us from CBS Sports Network, their college football analyst, the great Brian Jones. Brian, all I got to ask you is, as we welcome you into the show, is what were your emotions after watching the Longhorns' opening weekend and week one game? What's your frustration level?
Highly disappointed. You know how a parent is when, or if you're the child and you disappoint a parent and they say, I am so disappointed in you. For some reason, that stings more than that belt to your backside. Just them saying, I'm disappointed in you, and that's how I was. And I was definitely disappointed and taken aback with the post-game comments by Coach Herman, the fact that he said that he suggested that some of us thought he'd come in and sprinkle some fairy dust and
right. They'd
be a 12-0 team. No, I didn't have those expectations. I don't believe anyone had those expectations. I thought this would be an 8-9 win team probably, but I didn't expect them to come out in his first year and be 12-0, but I also didn't expect them to be pushed around. So that was what was most striking about the performance, is that they just looked out of sort. They didn't seem like a tough football team, and that just blew my mind, the fact that it's okay with losing, but just don't get pushed around. Don't get punked, as we say in the street.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. And you tip your hat to DJ Durkin and the Maryland Terrapins. I said, going into the ballgame, I didn't think it was a three. Texas was a three-score favorite. I think most had him at an 18-point favorite. And I was just listening to all this talk building up prior to the contest. Like, no, this is going to be a dogfight, because Maryland proved last year they were heading in the right direction, a bold team. And DJ Durkin has made his name as a defensive guy prior to becoming a head coach there. So I knew he'd have the Terps ready, and they were more than ready.
CBS Sports college football analyst Brian Jones back with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. So let's talk about some solutions. How can the Longhorns, how can they improve? What, as you look at the game tape, I mean, Brian, what is the number one adjustment? You talk about physicality, but you know, how can they turn this around and right the ship?
It was interesting something else Coach Herman said that we heard repeatedly from his predecessor, Coach Strong, which was that the team was trying too hard. Well, stop trying so hard. I've been there. Biggie, you're an athlete.
Yeah.
You've been there as well when you try too hard. You know, you down eight. Let's say you're in a baseball game, you're down eight, and you're trying to hit a home run. No, just get a couple of few singles together, or string a few singles together, and then maybe the big blast once you get closer. But I've been out there where I've tried too hard and I've tripped over my own feet. So I don't understand why this team continues to deal with trying too hard. So somehow he has impressed upon them that you don't have to go out there and save the world. Just one play at a time. Take care of your assignment, and then you hunt for work. So whatever it takes to get them to understand that, hopefully he can find out what that elixir is. Coach Strong wasn't, because we heard repeatedly from him that the team was trying too hard. And it's amazing that that was the refrain after Saturday's debacle there in Austin.
What kind of feedback are you getting from some of your sources in Austin in terms of how different Tom Herman's system is than Charlie Strong? You talk about his demeanor, his disposition. If these guys are overly amped up, they can't go out there and execute. I'm not saying relax, but to play free and to play within themselves, as you're talking about, to be able to make those winning plays.
Well, as Coach said, that he saw some stuff that he had witnessed early in spring, and he felt like the team had grown from those early mistakes and trying to figure out his system and things of that nature. And yes, they got a different defense they're sort of employing there now, more of a 3-4 scheme, but it's a hybrid, and I'm sure it's some of the same strategy that they've seen before under Coach Strong. So I can't see it being that much of an overhaul So you just got to get back to doing the bases, the fundamentals. And it sounds simplistic, but it is. Football is about blocking and tackling. You can have all those bells and whistles out there and the shiny objects, but if you can't block and tackle, you're not going to win no matter what. So just get back to knowing your responsibility, taking the proper angles and proper pursuit and all that good stuff, and things will happen for you in a successful manner.
Hey, we're breaking down the Big 12 Conference, visiting with Brian Jones, CBS Sports college football analyst. And so when we talk about Texas, what is the timetable? I mean, how long do you think it will be to turn things around? You said yourself that your expectations weren't super high, that this is a team that perhaps would not even win double digits, win 10 games this year, maybe a team that would come away with 8 wins. How long until they get, you know, things going in the right direction?
Well, he's going to have at least 3 years. That's what Coach Strong had. And actually, Coach Strong really only had about 2.5 because he jettisoned so many people at the beginning of his tenure there at Texas, kicked so many kids off the program, had it, I thought, heading in the right direction. I was surprised at the decrease in wins or lack of increase in wins a season ago. They look like they were going backwards, and I hope the same doesn't happen here because the talent's there. One thing that Coach Strong left that he didn't inherit was some good talent. So he's going to have at least 3 years to get this thing heading right, and I think they will. Yeah, last week, as disappointing as it was, I think it'll start getting on the right track, and Texas will be fine. But it was just so shocking to see them be pushed around like that. That is not what I envisioned. That I think they would thump Maryland, no, but I didn't think Maryland would come around and push Texas around the way they did.
And Brian, certainly a focal point is on the quarterback, Shane Buechele. Give us your thoughts on the quarterback situation. I understand that he's already banged up after one game. Where is he in terms of his health, and what are your expectations from Shane?
Well, they didn't have an identity, and that was another thing that bothered me about the game. No identity. Are we going to hang our hat on the run? We got a 260-pound back in Chris Warren. Are we going to battle these guys? We got an offensive line that should be pretty good this year with all the pieces coming back, but that didn't come to fruition. So there was no identity on the offensive side of the ball. Or are we going to spread them out and chunk it all over the place? Make up your mind who you're going to be. There's a ton of talented wide receivers, so I can understand the urge to just want to get it in those guys' hands. Well, you can do that in myriad ways, whether it's jet sweeps, things of that nature. And so they just got to find out who they're going to be on the offensive side of the ball. You know, and if Buechele can't go, someone else has to step up. Erling is a kid that they recruited pretty highly, and they like his athleticism. And, you know, is it her? Do you put him back in the quarterback slot? He's more of like a Greg Ward that Coach Herman had there in Houston. So they got some different options if Buechele can't go. But, yeah, that's disheartening as well, banged up after the first ballgame. We saw that a lot across the nation with quarterbacks going down in game one.
Well, it is only game one, and that really does raise concerns, because when we think about Shane Buechele, any concerns in terms of just his overall durability? Because he had difficulty, last year, remaining healthy and had to, you know, muscle through a myriad of injuries.
Yeah, you expect that for a freshman, a young guy, and you know, hasn't had a year in the off-season program and all that good stuff. And so it's hard to keep him healthy if you can't block up front.
Right.
So they're
going to
take a few hits, and you would hope it. And I know he has put on some muscle this past offseason. But you got to protect those guys and try to keep him out of harm's way. And it's just unfortunate he's dealing with some bruising already.
Okay, health-wise, but what is your belief in terms of Shane? Is he the guy? I mean, because it looks like, you know, that Texas doesn't have a lot of depth at the quarterback position. I understand there's only one other scholarship quarterback on the roster right now in Sam.
Well, once they figure out who they want to be, Big E, that's what's bothering me. Figure out what's your identity, then I can give you a better answer on that question. I just don't know at this point what they want to be. You know, if they want to be a team that can spread it around or chunk it around, we know he can do that. He proved that a season ago. So it just depends on if that's the angle and their approach. You know, what are you asking this guy to be? And any of your quarterbacks, what are you asking them to be? When you turn on that film, who are you expecting to see as far as Texas offense and their MO? I just don't know after one ball game. And a lot of teams could say that, even teams that won. They probably didn't play their best ball. There were some that did. Your Sooners did what they were supposed to do to UTEP and did mm-hmm. it in a great way. And you got a veteran quarterback that's leading the way. Ohio State, you know, they didn't play great in the first half, second half. They got the separation that many thought they would be able to get versus Indiana. And you know, others like Sam Darnold didn't play well. He two interceptions, no touchdowns in the first game out. A guy who's at the top of a lot of people's Heisman list. So just depends on what your identity is going to be. I think he can be the guy. I just don't know what Tim Beck, the OC there, what he wants this team to be. What's going to be their calling card?
Just a few more minutes tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show with Brian Jones, CBS Sports college football analyst. Brian, reach out to our audience, connect with them. Where can they check you out? Not only on TV, but also on the CBS Radio Sports Network.
G.O. and Jones, 6 to 9 Eastern a.m. 6 to 9 a.m., I should say, Eastern, Monday through Friday. That's it.
Hey, we got to talk about one of your former teams, the UCLA Bruins. How about that big comeback and that win? What do you think about that? And how much heat is Kevin Sullivan feeling right now?
To answer your last question first, he was feeling heat coming into the season. I thought
right.
it was unfortunate and a bad look for his AD Woodward there to come out and bash him in the media prior to the season. Coach Sullivan understands what he needs to accomplish this season. He's had some 8-5 seasons. Hell, Texas would take an 8-5 season at this point, but he's had repeated 8-5 season. The problem, he's gotten out to a great start, and then you had this precipitous fall there on the latter part of the schedule. He's got to find a way to beat Alabama, I believe, and I thought that prior to the collapse there at UCLA. But that team that showed up in the first half versus UCLA, they are pretty good. Now, if they can find that magic and just finish the drill, as we say, they'll be fine. But I think going forward, that defense has to play better. It's not on Coach Sullivan. John Chavis, he comes highly regarded from his days at Tennessee, at LSU as a defensive coordinator, and his defense didn't do anything during the second half. You got to win those type of ball games, and those are the type of ball games, if you lose, they can get you fired. But Coach Sullivan knew there was some pressure on him. He hadn't shied away from that. Now you've got this board. The region, this Busby cat who's got his criticism all over Facebook and or whatever social media platform. That's just bad. That's bad decorum on their part and disrespectful for their football coach. Hell, it's not like he wanted to go out there and lose the ball game. But that being said, Coach Sullivan knew there was heat on him. Doesn't help one iota. He's got to knock off a big boy. And it's got to be Alabama or LSU. He's yet to beat LSU, and they've yet to beat Florida in the crossover game either. So he's got to get – if he gets to that LSU ball game, he's got to find a way to beat them. But prior to that is Alabama, of course. So if they could get a big win at home versus Bama, that'd be a huge feather in his cap.
It certainly was an impressive comeback by UCLA, by the Bruins, talking about Texas A&M. Let's hit on another team in the SEC conference. How about Tennessee on Monday night? Did you stay up for that game, Brian?
I did, unfortunately, having to be up at 4 a.m.
Yeah.
for my radio show. I wasn't too happy with them that they went into a couple of overtimes, but
right.
Tennessee found a way to stop that vaunted option off of Johnson. Now Tennessee, I believe it's the last 4 or 5 ball games they've given up over 400 or 500 yards rushing. So that's not good. But when you're taking on that option, it's difficult to stop, and they found a way to stop it there when on the 2-point conversion, and they found some offense. I like the way John Kelly ran the ball, the new starting tailback for Tennessee. Dougherty, he looked the part in that second half, looked very comfortable. Marquez Callaway is going to be the new starting receiver with Jennings going down, and he looked pretty good too. So they found some playmakers, and it's the first ball game of the season. They have things they need to tweak, and you're just happy you can tweak them with a victory instead of a loss on the ledger. So it was a dynamite football game, a lot of action back and forth, but I wish they would go a little quicker for us, those of
yeah.
us that have to get up in the wee hours of the morning.
It is week 2 of the college football season, and we are so glad you're with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. We've got to step aside, and we'll be rejoined with Brian Jones, the CBS Sports college football analyst, after this quick break.
This is the Big East Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Good evening and welcome back to hour number one at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. The college football conversation continues. We have got you covered. That's right. We're talking about the SEC, the Big 12 Conference with Brian Jones from CBS Sports. Hey, another team out of the SEC we've got to hit on. It's a compelling matchup this weekend is TCU and Arkansas. How do you see this game playing out? My family and I, we had a chance to, we were in Fort Worth from the hurricane and we had a chance to take in and watch the Frogs. Very impressed with a number of plays and they certainly took care of business against Jackson State. You can never underestimate a Gary Patterson program and team.
Especially coming off the season they had last year.
Right, they're hungry.
Yeah, and you were there. You saw it in person, so you should know. There was speed on that field for TCU. And I know you're taking on Jackson State, but still, they made Jackson State look like they were sitting still. And I think the key for Arkansas is they have to protect Austin Allen. They gave up one sack in last year's ball game, but he was hit repeatedly. And he proved in last year's game that when they're in Fort Worth for the Razorbacks that he's a tough customer. And they're going to have to prove that again because TCU had five sacks versus Jackson State. They're going to try to get after Austin Allen again, and especially if Austin Allen is in third and long and they can't get the running game going. I think it's going to be a huge test for the new defensive coordinator, Paul Rhodes, there at Arkansas, taking on all that speed. And he got a dual threat quarterback in Kenny Hill that you have to deal with as well. So I like TCU in this matchup, and I knew Gary Patterson would bounce back after this lackluster season they had a year ago.
How do you think the Oklahoma-Ohio State game is going to play out? You touched on that briefly, but I know revenge is certainly going to be on the mind because they did not take care of business last year in Norman.
Well, I love Baker Mayfield. He's at the top of my Heisman list.
You do, okay.
The guy is just a player, and we got a chance to meet him last year when he's up here for the Heisman stuff, and he's the only guy that's been in the top five in voting for the Heisman the last 2 years, and just a great, fun-loving young man. Yeah, he had a little misstep during the offseason, but I think he's a true leader on that football team. They get some running backs to emerge, some wide receivers, and I think they can, with that offensive line, they can more than hold their own versus a damn good defensive line there at Ohio State.
College football, it is back. We are ready for another thrilling weekend, and of course, we've been going one-on-one with Brian Jones. Check him out. CBS Sports college football analyst. He knows his stuff. Also spent some time in the NFL with the Raiders, the Colts, and the Saints. You do it all, my friend, and we love when you're on the program. Thank you so much for carving out some time.
Big E, you got it, and I'm glad you and everyone in the fam are safe from Harvey, and hopefully you can get back to normal pretty soon.
Blessings. Much more coming your way in hour number two at SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio.